Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Ilson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. A lot of action today on radio and on television, football all over the dial. A lot of good games on today. The Bears are playing, as you know, against Detroit, the Lions. And the Bears are a 5-point favorite. Should be a tough game. The Bears are about due to come up with a good one, although Detroit last week really came to life and played very well against the San Diego Chargers. A 3 o'clock game today should be an interesting game because it is at Miami. And they have, as I've said many times, I think the best coach in football, Don Shula. And I don't say that so much, but I've asked players, and the players tell me, who've been with other teams, that Shula really knows the game inside and out. Should be a very interesting game with Baltimore. And then the Monday night game should be an exciting game, the Rams against Atlanta. The Rams have sort of been underplaying their real talent of late, but they should bust loose tomorrow night. It's a very big game for them, and it should be a very exciting game. We're going to talk about sports today with a good friend of mine, David Israel, who writes and columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and one of the new bright lights to come on the Chicago scene in many, many a year. And I'm sure you've enjoyed his writings as I have. We have many things to talk about, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have David Israel of the Chicago Tribune as our guest today. As I mentioned before, he's an outstanding sports columnist and actually a more or less of a newcomer on the scene, and he's made a lot of impact on people who really enjoy his writings. Dave, I'd wonder, when I've read a number of your columns, I can think back to one that I think must have caused a furor, and that was the column you wrote about our mutual friend Herman Frank.
Yeah, well, I suggested, I think it was back in July, it was August. It was the Friday after Martin was fired by the Yankees, that Billy Martin be named manager of the Cubs, not because so much that I admire Billy Martin or all the things he stands for, but because I thought he was ideal for the situation with the Cubs. He's a good manager to get the most out of a mediocre club. And at the time, the Cubs had a shot at winning the pennant, a realistic shot, because the Phillies were not having a good year. The pitching wasn't terrific. The Pirates still are, you know, were still a question mark. And I think, in fact, they were below the Cubs in the standings. And I think Martin actually could have turned things around. And I don't think Franks is any kind of inspirational manager for his players. And any number of members of the pitching staff will tell you he does not know how to handle pitchers. So I thought a change was in order. And I still think a change is in order, but he's been rehired for another year, so we'll have to muddle through with him again.
When we talk about your getting a reaction to the things you write, how do you get them? In the form of mail or phone calls or what?
Yeah, screwy phone calls and a lot of mail. Yeah, so that's fun. Find out what people think. They got to buy the paper to find out what I think. I can find out what they think for free, so it's not so bad.
Well, you just had an interesting experience. I know how much I enjoyed them in the many World Series that I was able to cover, and you just covered the Yankees and the Dodgers, and the Dodgers getting off to a great start, winning two games and then falling flat. What was the reaction in Los Angeles?
The reaction in Los Angeles was the reaction to it was similar to what it would have been if they won. People sat on their hands and just looked at the game. People go there like at the ballpark are like fans at a game show, I suppose. You know, they applaud when they're told to by the electric scoreboard, or you know, the applause sign goes on. And to find out what's going on in the game, they have to listen to the radio. You know, hear what Vin Scully can tell them what's going on. Yeah. They're not really good baseball fans in the sense that they know the game as they do in Chicago or Boston or New York. You know, they're not great traditional fans. They're willing to spend money to go to games, as the Dodgers' attendance attests. You know, 2 years in a row now, the Dodgers have broken major league attendance records. But the reaction among the ballplayers, by the end of the series, they were sort of catatonic. Some of them, others of them realized what had happened. Their infield just isn't capable of winning in that situation. It's just not a good defensive infield. They didn't make the double plays when they had to. They weren't making routine plays when they had to. The shortstop and the second baseman, Russell and Lopes, were just insufficient. They hit well enough, but they just aren't good. They're converted outfielders, and they're not good infielders.
What about the fact that Lasorda didn't start Rao, a left-hander?
Well, that caused some uproar in the local newspapers there. But he wanted to go the road. He believes firmly in going with what, you know, in the old Darryl Royal idea that you dance with who brung you. And so he figured Hooten, Sutton, and John got him there, and he was going to stick with them. Now, as you suggested earlier when we were talking before the show, they might have been better off using Rao more because the Yankees do not hit well or do not hit as well against left-handers as they do against right-handers. So he might have made a tactical error, but he just didn't use Rao. Even in relief, he went with Welsh in tight situations, and when he was giving, they were giving up. After the first two games, they were behind by so many runs, especially in the last two games, that he wasn't using Rao because he was saving him. I don't know what for, though.
Well, now coming on to a new season, the Dodgers are really going to have their problem because John will be gone. They have inadequate catching. They have problems at shortstop. They don't look to me like they're any cinch for 69. If Cincinnati comes up with anything, they should win it.
Well, if the Giants come up with anything in the free agent market, the Giants will give them some trouble. But the thing is, the Dodgers do have great hitting. And their catching isn't as bad as it seems because Yeager is one of the two people on their team who is not a defensive problem. He's really a very good defensive catcher. The other good defensive player is Reggie Smith, and Garvey is very good at handling the ball. While he doesn't have a good arm, he's very good at handling the ball. Their problems may not be as severe as you might think, because the one thing they shouldn't do though is move Welsh into the starting rotation to take John's place, because I think a pitcher like Welsh, who's got an overpowering fastball and a good curveball, he's got Sandy Koufax stuff, is more important to a team as a relief pitcher where he can pitch in 70 or 75 games than he would be as a starter.
Dave, what about a few of the people that impressed you that you had a chance to talk to, maybe to use as column material during the series?
Well, Garvey always is very good, and I like Garvey a lot. Rick Monday is very good on the Dodgers. And Sutton is just one of the funniest people in baseball, one of the most honest people in baseball, which gets him into trouble once in a while, and people sort of don't understand him. In fact, he got a bum deal from the fans in Los Angeles. He was booed when he was introduced before the first game, which because of his fight with Garvey in August in New York. And the Yankees, the most impressive member of the Yankees is the manager, Bob Lemon, who's probably the most fundamentally decent human being in baseball. Jackson's always performing, and he's, interesting to listen to when he's on. Munson's is, I find, more appealing than most other people do, because when he's talking, he's forthright. He's not trying to snow anybody. Nettles, nobody to talk to, but he's fun to watch play.
You're talking about some guys like Munson. Munson's got a real ability, He comes up with those big hits like he did so many times in the series.
Oh, he's a great, great player.
He is.
Yeah, and he didn't hit well the first two games of the series. He didn't hit well in the American League playoffs, but in the last four games of the series, he drove in seven or eight runs.
Tell me, do you honestly think that Billy Martin will be back as manager of the Yankees?
I don't know. There were one of the players in the Yankees whose name I won't use was asked if he was wanted to sign a 5-year extension to his contract, and all he said was, "Tell me who'll be manager in 1980." It's an important player, and the implication was clear: he did not want to come back if Martin was manager in 1980, and neither will a number of other important Yankees. I think the Martin thing was very good show business on Steinbrenner's part, bringing back on Old Timers Day as he did on that Saturday afternoon. It was also very good business, because the week that Martin did not manage, there was something of a minor boycott against the Yankees. There was no walk-up business at all. Their attendance fell off. They were only doing tickets. They were only doing tickets that had been sold in advance. Their total attendance was almost exactly the same as their advance sale. So Steinbrenner, became panicked a little bit, I think, about how costly it might be financially.
There's been quite a hullabaloo raised because Lemon didn't get a full share, but did they give Martin a half share, too?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they voted the managers each a half share to make up for one full share. Uh-huh. And I don't know if there's anything wrong with that or not, but, Lemon gets paid by the club, too, so. Bob didn't have to file for any kind of unemployment this year, so it's okay.
Well, I was glad to see him get a break. As you say, he's really one of the nicest guys in baseball. He left the White Sox and then went home and then got this job. And look what's happened to him. You couldn't ask for anything nicer. What about the assignments that you write columns on, like the Franks column and other columns that you've written? Does somebody dictate what you write as a sports columnist, or do you write about whatever you want to write about?
Well, essentially, events dictate what I write. I mean, there's no person. It's just things become, there are logical subjects that fall into place, especially here where there's, in Chicago, where there's so much going on because there are two baseball teams, there's a professional football team, there's a lot of college football, there's hockey, there's basketball. There's always something to write about locally, and then there are the events that you travel to. So things, it's just a logical succession of things that you want to write about. And then there are also curious things that, you know, that you happen upon. Like there was an ad the other day in the Wall Street Journal, a little 2-inch by 2-inch ad buried on page 26 that said that there was a world team tennis franchise for sale. So I tried to get together a consortium of people. We raised $167.25, and I wrote a column about trying to buy the team for $167.25. And I usually decide, you know, that's the latitude of being a columnist is that you're supposed to say what you think, and the reason why you write it is the reason why you write a column is to tell the truth and to entertain people, So, it's, you know, it has to come from me more than from anybody else.
Next week is an important date coming up. That's the free agent draft. Wonder what you feel about some of those players. What about the Rose case? What's your opinion of that?
I think he's been treated shabbily by the Reds. I don't think he's ever been fully appreciated by the team, what he's meant to the city in his 16 years that he's played there now. I think he's the most appealing athlete in America. I think he's more people identify with him than with anybody else, because he's sort of a guy who has average skills. You know, he's not a fast runner. He doesn't have a great arm. He's inordinately strong. He's a well-built athlete, but you know he doesn't have the great skill, the great natural skills that you see in so many other players. Yet he's become, you know, the single probably best known player of his time. And most admired player of his time. It's funny, and it's all happened in the last 2 years. He used to be sort of a villain wherever he went, but with, you know, reaching 3,000 hits, with getting 200 hits so many times, with the 2 years that they won the World Series and he played well, with 44-game hitting streak, I think he's become, you know, the most admired athlete in the United States. And he's always been sort of a human monument in Cincinnati. His father, Pete Sr., was a local legend as a sandlot athlete. And by the way, he worked in a bank, which is sort of curious. He was especially good as a football player. Pete was a great high school athlete at I think Western Hills High School in Cincinnati. You know, he signed with the Reds out of high school. He went through minor leagues in just 2 or 3 years, joined the team when they were still pretty good back in the Hutchinson era, and always has been one of their better players all the way through that time. They always used him as sort of a villain, you know. And first, Frank Robinson was the guy that was favored by the management. Then it was Bench and Morgan always got the favored treatment. And Rose was always the guy who had to fight for his contracts, whatever they were, you know, had to fight for recognition, you know, nationally. Not in Cincinnati, he's always been the most beloved by the fans. And everything he did, he had to scrap for. And now, it's clear that he can play another 3 years, I think. It's clear that he's a real drawing card, probably the best drawing card in baseball. And he can fill any ballpark at any time. And they won't give him what I think they owe him for all that he's done for 16 years. Well, there's some other smarter people in baseball management who are willing to pay him for what he wants for three. He wants to be the highest paid player in baseball. And he'd like a 3-year contract. And I think San Diego Padres would be more than willing to give it to him. Ray Kroc, in fact, this year had, shortly after Rose got 3,000 hit, on a Sunday afternoon in San Diego, they had Pete Rose Day. And on that day, Rose became the first player ever to throw out the first ball and be the leadoff hitter in a game. And the Padres broke their Sunday afternoon attendance record by 12,000 on that day, on Pete Rose Day. Later in the season, on the day when he would have hit in his 56th straight game, tying DiMaggio's record, that game would have been played in San Diego. And they had another Pete Rose Day, even though the streak had ended 12 games before, to honor Rose again. And they had terrific attendance again because of Rose.
Kroc can afford him.
Yeah, Kroc can afford him. And they got rid of Gamble, so they have some more money to play with because Hargrove is not nearly as highly paid as Oscar Rose. And they're going to make a big play for Rose. Rose is interested in going, very interested in going to Philadelphia. He thinks the ideal situation there would be for him to play left field, for Luzinski to play first, for Hebner to become the number one pinch hitter and utility guy. And he thinks that the problem in Philadelphia and the reason why they win a lot of games during the regular season and don't do well in the playoffs is because there's a certain lack of leadership. There's Boa is a great player, but he's just not a strong enough figure to dominate a clubhouse. Rose can bring the team together and really...
Well, I agree with everything you've said about him. We were fortunate enough to have Pete out here a couple of years ago, and man, he made a big impression on everybody. And of course, with the years I spent in ballparks, I agree with you. He's the outstanding ball player I ever saw.
Well, he works harder than anybody, probably. You know, he's worked harder for what he gets.
He really does. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is the outstanding sports columnist of the Tribune, David Israel. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Yeah. We're delighted to have David Israel of the Chicago Tribune Sports Department as our guest today. Dave, what about some of the people you've talked to, maybe with the idea of someday doing a column? Or what about a fellow like George Halas?
I really am interested and intrigued by Halas because he's the only true pioneer that I'm ever going to meet. And, you know, an industrial pioneer. He founded the National Football League, which has become, you know, it's not General Motors, but it certainly is a big industry. It's, you know, it's not like he's sort of a Henry Ford in a sense. And he has wonderful stories to tell, and he really, you know, I guess he was a scoundrel through some of the years, you know, trying to, you know, cutting corners and beating people out of money, and, you know, he was the first guy who spied on practices in National Football League and all that.
But he had to be frugal in the early days.
Yeah, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's interesting to spend time with. So.
I imagine he had a happy time this week with my old friend Red Grange because Halas and he had so many wonderful times together.
Yeah, I don't quite remember him though that well. So
Grange?
Well, no, I never saw him play. Yeah, obviously.
No.
So.
Well, what about the Bears? Everybody in town's talking about the Bears. Who's at fault? The coach? Is it Avellini? What is the problem? Have you had any chance to talk with the coach?
Yeah, I've talked to the coach some. Part of the problem is Myers. Neil Armstrong coaches mostly the defense. He's the head coach, but his like so many head coaches, he concentrates on one area while someone else concentrates on another area. And he concentrates on defense. George Allen's the same way. Shula concentrates mostly on defense and concentrates mostly on offense and has Arne Sparger running the defense. Neil concentrates mostly on defense. And Ken Meyer is the offensive coordinator. Meyer was Chuck Knox's offensive coordinator in Los Angeles, and he was the head coach of San Francisco last year. Meyer's philosophies are very conservative. They're the things that upset Carol Rosen. His philosophy is what, while the Rams were winning, and not getting to the Super Bowl, but winning the Western Conference every year during Knox's reign, Meyer's conservative offensive philosophy is what alienated Carol Rosenblum, the owner. They weren't playing exciting enough football for him. So when you read that the Bears are running on first down 84% of the time, as Don Pearson reported in the Tribune, you know, and they're not diverse enough, they're not surprising enough, they're much too predictable. That's, I think, Myers to blame for that. So the play calling, you know, and the philosophy is his. And if you don't like the, and if you think that they're failing, they're losing because they're too conservative offensively, then you blame Ken Meyer.
It's not Avellini's fault.
Well, it is. I mean, I don't know. Avellini is their best quarterback. I think that was pretty evident during the preseason. Vince Evans it doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's ever going to be a great quarterback, and Phipps just doesn't have it anymore. I don't know if he ever had it. He never really won big in Cleveland either. But, you know, Avellini is a player of limited ability who, as Ed Stone said last week, probably has reached his peak performance, yeah. And his peak performance isn't that great. He's an ordinary National Football League quarterback. I know Finks likes him because he sees in Avellini the same things he saw in Joe Capp. You know, he's a tough guy who can lead a team. However, Capp was probably a better athlete, and Capp was lighter on his feet too. Avellini doesn't move too well.
You think the Bears will win today?
I'm not sure. This is a game that deserves to be a tie and a very boring one.
So. Now, we're going into November here in just a couple of days. Kind of looking back, what do you visualize as the big sports stories of 78, a few of them?
Okay, the best story is the Yankees.
The Yankees.
Reggie Jackson bunts, gets suspended. A week later, Martin resigns, not entirely of his own volition. Lemon gets the job. A couple of weeks after that, at the time they're 10 games behind. They fall 14 games behind, and they come back to win it all. That's got to be the best story of the year. Another great story is Triple Crown for Affirmed and its battles with Alidar. Another great story is Ali losing to Spinks and coming back to win the championship again. Bud Wilkinson, win or lose, is a terrific story. 15 years out of football.
There's a guy I'd really like to see get a break.
Yeah, well, he's not going to get one. I mean, the team's... Bidwell's fouled up the team pretty severely. He meddled when Coryell was winning. Now he's going to meddle when Wilkinson's losing. Wilkinson's got to just take control because he's a smart enough guy to win. And he's just been plagued by terribly bad luck. Is the succession of injuries. Today there was a story in the Tribune by our new writer Skip Myslinski, which showed how there was a succession of injuries that really hampered the team. Held them from winning. But I think Wilkinson ultimately can win.
What do you think was behind the George Allen story? That has to be one of the big stories of the year. Here's a guy, the new coach of the Rams, and all of a sudden, boom, he's fired.
Yeah, well, he's a pretty distasteful, despicable kind of person, to use strong language. I covered Allen in Washington for 3 years, and I've never covered anybody, including Herman Franks, who I liked less and admired less. He's deceitful. He uses players. I think he lies to players. He lies about owners. Takes advantage of situations that he has no right taking advantage of. And he's not as great a coach as everybody seems to think he is. That's been proven in Washington, where Pardee, with just about the same team, that Allen did not get into the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years, is 6-2, and going into today's action is a game in first place in the NFC's Eastern Division. And in Los Angeles, Allen's being proven to be a failure, too, because he didn't win at all. He had a team in complete disarray. They were totally disaffected with him. They name Alvesi coach, and they win their first 7 regular season games in a row. Then they lose last week in a lackluster performance in New Orleans, but I suspect that they won't lose more than two times the rest of the season.
How many times this year have you talked to Muhammad Ali?
I covered him a couple of times. I talked to him when there was nobody else around the day after the fight. I feel a lot of ways about it. I'm tired of Ali's act. It's been the same thing over and over again. But it's been, if you look at it as a whole, and if you look at all that he's accomplished, he's probably the most remarkable. With remarkable sort of a meaningless word, but he might be the most remarkable athlete of his times. And certainly the best known person in the world, which is for an athlete is a terrific accomplishment.
It probably is too bad that he didn't fight at the time when there were some good fighters around. We were talking about a couple of them. Fella I admire so much, Joe Lewis. I thought he was one of the greatest fighters I ever saw. And the other fellow that I told you was such a body puncher.
Who, Marciano?
Yeah,
Marciano was too small. He couldn't have beaten Ali. And he did fight when there was another great fighter around. A guy who's probably one of the 5 greatest heavyweights ever is Joe Frazier. A guy who never gets credit for all that he accomplished. And his series of 3 fights with Ali, starting with the fight in the Garden when Ali came back from retirement, about a year after Ali came back from his involuntary sabbatical. Their series of 3 fights is the best series of fights in the history of boxing. I've seen films of other, of the Tony Dempsey fights, and of the Zell Graziano fights, and there's nothing like the Manila fight and the 2 fights, the 15-rounder in the Garden, the 12-rounder in the Garden. There's been nothing like them in boxing. So I think Frazier and Ali are certainly 2 great heavyweights. George Foreman, before he lost his marbles or whatever happened to him, was a great, great puncher. I mean, a devastating puncher. Joe Lewis, from everything I've read, has fought something called the Bum of the Month Club. So those guys weren't any better than anybody Ali's fought. Yeah.
These comments, interesting comments, are by David Israel, well-known sports columnist of the Chicago Tribune. And we're delighted to have him as a guest today, and we'll be back in just about 1 minute.
It's a long column. It's not readable.
We're delighted to have David Israel of the Chicago Tribune Sports Department as our guest today. Dave, they tell me you have an interest in politics and the law. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it's more than a passing interest, I guess, but it's it's nothing that right now is compelling. So,
well, now with the gift you have for writing and your great interest in sports, would you be interested in a legal career?
Well, I don't know. There's probably going to come a time when I'll look for other things to do, and maybe then, yeah, but not right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Huh. I'm sure George Langford is too.
I hope he is. If he's not, I'm in trouble.
Well, here the other night, did you facetiously pick Dallas by 35, or was that a gag or what?
No, it wasn't a gag. I really thought they were going to win. I didn't realize Martin was going to get hurt early. I didn't realize the guy was going to fumble. I didn't realize Princeton was going to fumble and Dorsey was going to fumble deep in their own territory. I think after those two quick touchdowns, Dallas dominated the game. And Staubach didn't even play particularly well. He had a very bad night passing. But you take away those two touchdowns, and let's see, the final score was 21-10. So it's 10-7, and if Dallas had been more competitive, they would have run more, and I think they would have won big. Minnesota won on a couple of gifts.
Dave, thanks so much for being with us today and for your interesting comments, and good fortune to you and your great paper, the Chicago Tribune.
Well, thanks a lot, Bob. Enjoyed it.
Our guest today, David Israel, well-known sports columnist of the Chicago Tribune. We've enjoyed having him. Remember, a lot of things on the tube today. Let's hope the Bears have a good day at Soldier Field. And anyway, have a happy day. And our guest next week is going to be the greatest quarterback the Bears have ever had, Sid Luckman. So remember that next Sunday. Sid Luckman will analyze the 1978 Bears for us. In the meantime, have a happy day. And this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.